Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, chapter number 7, further inquiries by Vidura, text number 13.
Yada
Indriya,
Indriya
Uparamo
Oto
Dashtri
Atmani
Pare Harau Valiyante Tada Klesha Samsuptasya Eva Krishnashaha Yadendriyo Paramosta Drashtrat mani pare harau Valiyante tada klesha Samtuptasyeva krishnashaha Yadendriyo paramoto Drashtrat mani pare harau Valiyante tada klesha Samsuptasyeva krishnasaha Yadendriyo paramotha Drashtatmani pare karau Valiyante tada klesha Samsuptasyeva krishnasaha Yada when Indriya senses Uparama satiated Ata thus Drashtri Atmani unto the seer, the super soul, Pare in the transcendence, Haro unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Valiyante become merged in Tada at that time Klesha miseries Samsuptasya one who has enjoyed sound sleep Eva like Krishna Shaha completely. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. When the senses are satisfied in the seer, super soul, the personality of Godhead, and merge in Him, all miseries are completely vanquished as after a sound sleep. Purport. The quivering of the living entity, as described above, is due to the senses. Since the entire material existence is meant for sense gratification, the senses are the medium of material activities, and they cause the quivering of the steady soul. Therefore, these senses are to be detached from all such material activities. According to the impersonalists, The senses are stopped from work by merging the soul in the super soul, Brahman. The devotees, however, do not stop the material senses from acting, but they engage their transcendental senses in the service of the transcendence, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In either case, the activities of the senses in the material field are to be stopped by cultivation of knowledge, and, if possible, they can be engaged in the service of the Lord. The senses are transcendental in nature, but their activities become polluted when contaminated by matter. We have to treat the senses to cure them of the material disease, not stop them from acting, as suggested by the impersonalist. In the Bhagavad Gita 2:59, it is said that one ceases all material activities only when satisfied by contact with a better engagement. Consciousness is active by nature and cannot be stopped from working. Artificially stopping a mischievous child is not the real remedy. The child must be given some better engagement so that he will automatically stop causing mischief. In the same way, the mischievous activities of the senses can be stopped only by better engagement in relation with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When the eyes are engaged in seeing the beautiful form of the Lord, the tongue engaged in taking prasadam, or the remnants of foodstuff offered to the Lord, the ears are engaged in hearing his glories, the hands are engaged in cleansing the temple of the Lord, the legs engaged in visiting his temples, or when all the senses are engaged in transcendental variegatedness, then only can the transcendental senses become satiated and eternally free from material engagement. The Lord, as the super soul residing in everyone's heart, and as the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the transcendental world, far beyond the material creation, is the seer of all our activities. Our activities must be so transcendentally saturated that the Lord will be kind enough to look upon us favorably and engage us in his transcendental service. Then only can the senses be satisfied completely and be no longer troubled by material attraction. Just like now, many people are struggling to stay awake. They're being attracted to the mode of ignorance. So, how will one rise beyond that tendency to want to enjoy the mode of ignorance during the Bhagavatam class? That will be by the process mentioned above, or prior to what we were saying at this moment, as we've just read from the purport. So, this is very nice. When the senses are satisfied in the seer, super soul, the personality of Godhead, and merge in him, all miseries are completely vanquished as after a sound sleep. We may become very fatigued, but after having a good rest, we feel energized and enlivened, isn't it? So in the same way, one can feel completely energized and enlivened by, as the Bhagavatam says, merging the senses in him. Now there's two understandings of that merging. The impersonalists have their understanding of merging, and the devotees have their understanding of merging. The impersonalist thinks, well, you merge, you become God. But how you can love God if you become God? If there's only you, and there's no one else, there's no reciprocation, then how love can exist? As Prabhupada explains, love means two, Krishna and you. We have to have that relationship. It's like here in this world even, we enjoy having relationships with each other, isn't it? I love you, you love me. I serve you, you serve me. See, we enjoy having loving relationships. As described in the Upadeshamrita, six kinds of loving exchanges. Loving exchanges require persons. You must exist as an individual, I must exist as an individual, and then we can have loving exchange. So if we deny the existence of individuality on the ultimate level, then there is no scope for loving exchange. That relegates love to some conditioned activity within the material existence only. That it does not exist in an original pure form. But even the Greek philosophers understood that these things in this world, which are in a polluted form, have their original pure form in transcendence. The nature of that they did not understand, but they understood there was a pure form of beauty, a pure form of everything. So that is a fact, that pure love exists, and that therefore necessitates that the living entity does not totally disappear into the Lord. He doesn't just melt into God and become God. Rather, the living entity becomes merged in the sense of complete absorption. Completely absorbed in serving Krishna. No separate interest. That is burgeoning for the Vaishnavas. The devotee has no interest besides the interest of the Lord. He has no separate idea that I will be satisfied in this way or I'll be satisfied in that way. He simply wants to satisfy the Lord, and by that absorption in satisfying the Lord, he becomes totally satisfied. As we many times say, when you water the root of the tree, all the leaves and branches are nourished. When you feed your belly, the entire body is nourished. Now, if the hand thinks, why should I feed the belly? I will enjoy separately. Let me take the rice and simply squeeze it and get some nutrition for myself. I don't want to serve the entire body. Will that hand derive any taste from the rice? Will it get any nutritional value from the rice? No. Just a waste. It's simply shama eva hi kevalam. It's a useless endeavor to try to squeeze some nutrition out of that rice. But if the hand won't feed the belly, then automatically it gets everything it needs. If the living entity will serve God, then that living entity will get everything required, everything necessary for his satisfaction. He will not be lacking in anything. It's interesting here, when the senses are satisfied, so Krishna consciousness is not a program of sensory deprivation. Some people think it is. Well, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no meat eating, no gambling. Oh my God, how you people can live. You're depriving yourselves of the very necessities of life. Eating that, you know, illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, gambling. I can't live without it. Can't even dream of existing without these things. And you people are doing this, you must be crazy. So some cult leader has brainwashed you into giving up these things and giving all of your money to him. No. It is simply a matter of, as Prabhupada points out, refers to Bhagavad Gita 2:59 here in his purport, Padang drishva nivartate vishayav nivartante nirahar rasadehina rasavar jang rasopyasha padang drishva nivartate. The embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, though the taste for sense objects remains. But ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, he is fixed in consciousness. So, it is not a matter of sensory deprivation. It is a matter of giving the senses something better. Why have some 10th class sensory engagement when we can have first class? You see? Why live in the ghetto when you can live uptown? In the nicest possible place. Why live in this hellish material existence where life is a temporary, full of ignorance and full of misery, when you can live in the eternal transcendental world where there's no birth, no death, no old age, no disease, simply eternity, knowledge, and bliss? Only a fool would want to suffer in this temporary, ignorant place. Any intelligent person would realize, what am I doing in this horrible place? Why am I suffering here unnecessarily? But if someone becomes too enamored by the false glitter of this material existence, they will not like to hear this philosophy, because they take that illusory sense of happiness derived from the combination of the senses with the sense objects as the all in all. They take it as everything. That so-called happiness derived when you take your senses and you bring them together with sense objects. You see? They know nothing more than this. They are under the spell of Maya, illusion. And were it not for the mercy of His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, we would be in the same position. And sometimes we're still in the same position. Even after having heard these instructions hundreds and thousands of times, we find our minds being attracted to sense gratification. Prabhupada points out it's actually not surprising. I mean, we've been enamored by money and by the opposite sex since time immemorial. So it's not surprising that the fascination for the opposite sex and money still lingers in the heart. It's not surprising. But we have to deal with it properly, strongly, so we're no longer carried away by it. That's the point. And that is by engaging the senses in the satisfaction of Krishna and thereby giving them satisfaction, as we say, Govinda. He who gives pleasure to the senses. If you can please Govinda by your activities, then you will be satisfied. Your eyes will be satisfied, your ears will be satisfied, your nose will be satisfied. Every part of your body will be totally happy and satisfied if you engage everything in the service of Krishna. In the beginning, this requires faith, because this is some subtle pleasure that is not so easily understood when we're on the gross platform. It requires some faith. So how we will get that faith? We have to find people who have that faith. You see. And then by associating with those persons, that is the devotees of the Lord, the Vaishnavas, the Hare Krishna people, the Hare Krishnas, by associating with the Vaishnavas, the devotees of the Lord who have that faith in the process of bhakti yoga, and who are actually tasting nectar by engaging themselves in Krishna consciousness, we will taste nectar just by being in their presence, actually. I know that's what got me. I saw how enlivened was His Holiness Vishnu Janaswami. He was so enlivened in Krishna consciousness. He was relishing. I could see he was tasting nectar. And just by being in his presence, I was also tasting nectar. So I wanted to be with him all the time. So that's how I joined. I wanted the nectar. And he taught me how to get it. He inspired me to become Prabhupada's disciple, to surrender to Krishna, give up all of my nonsense habits, become a strict follower of the path of Krishna bhakti. We may be addicted to so many material pleasures, but they are not worth it. They are not worth it. They simply leave us, as Prabhupada is again using this word, quivering. We were discussing yesterday, it was three times in the purport. Quiver was there, quivering was twice. And now again, Prabhupada is bringing this word quivering in. There's two positions. There's the quivering position and the steady position. He mentions here today the word steady. They cause the quivering. The sense gratification causes the quivering of the steady soul. You see, the natural original position of the soul is steady. He's solid. Or she, same thing. Solid, steady position. No quivering. But as soon as we become attracted to this material sense gratification, it's a quivering situation. No longer steady. Why is that? Because sense gratification means we come to the mental platform. And what is the mental platform? Accept, reject, accept, reject. There's no steadiness of mind on the mental platform. Constantly accept, reject, should I or shouldn't I? Very unsteady position. Quivering position. To become steady, we have to come to the spiritual platform. Otherwise, you will always be very shaky, quivering position. Tottering position. Unsteady. So if you want that steady position, you have to work for it. Even chanting, Prabhupada said, the tongue must work. Some people can't chant. They just can't bring themselves to discipline themselves to chant Hare Krishna 16 rounds a day. Even though they know they should, they just can't do it. They have this lazy tendency of not wanting to work. So if we want actually to achieve the steady platform, the spiritual platform, we have to work for it. We have to deny the senses things that they would like to have And we have to give the senses things that they may not like to have right now in their present quivering position. This is called training. We have to train these senses how to become satisfied by engaging in Krishna service. That is their natural position. So as we begin to take the training given by the spiritual master, it becomes less austere and more nectarian as time passes by. In the beginning, the sugar candy tastes very bitter to the person suffering from jhana. Tastes very, very bitter. But as he continues to take that sugar candy, under the instructions, the expert instructions of the qualified physician, then that sugar candy regains its original sweet taste. So in our present quivering state of consciousness, sometimes the thought of surrender to Krishna is horrible for us. Even Prabhupada, of course, he was not really like that, but he's taking our position to teach us. He said that when he was dreaming how Guru Maharaj was calling him, that you come now and take sannyas, he was thinking, horrible. How I can do that? Prabhupada putting himself in that position. That is actually our position. That is simply a pastime of the pure devotee. But for us, it's not a pastime. It's a reality that we are addicted to material sense gratification. And the idea of completely surrendering to Krishna makes us quiver. So we have to change it. It should be just the opposite. We should desire only service to Krishna, and the thought of material sense gratification makes us quiver. That's how it should be. So how do we get from point A to point B? To where the spontaneous attraction for Krishna is reawake. How do we get there? That is the process known as sadhana bhakti. Some so-called Vaishnavas, they want to throw away sadhana bhakti. They say, why do follow rules and regulations? Just come to Raganuga immediately. We have seen. It was rather shocking. We met one American young woman who was introduced that you just come straight to Raganuga. She actually went to Radhakunda in India. And some Babaji told her which gopi she was in Krishna's Leela. So she was simply meditating, I'm such and such a gopi and I'm doing this for Krishna. And in the evening she was having illicit sex with one boy who she had come with from the west to visit India. So she's meditating on a gopi, being a gopi, and she's having illicit sex at Radhakunda. You see? This is called sahaja. One who takes the process very cheaply. Thinking they can jump over the rules and regulations and come directly to spontaneous love for Krishna. It is not possible. If you're sick, you require treatment. You require medicine. You require restricted diet. You require restricted activities if you're sick. And then gradually you will become healthy. Just like the story, that one boy, he was in the hospital. He was on the verge of dying, actually. And his little brother thought he would do a favor for him. He brought him his favorite sweet. He smuggled it into the hospital and fed it to him, and it almost killed him because he was very sick. If one is in a diseased condition, then you have to restrict your sense gratification until you come back to your normal, healthy state. So now we require restrictions. We require regulations because we are in a diseased state of consciousness. to try to imitate the liberated souls, we cannot do. We simply have to strictly follow the process of Krishna Bhakti, Sadhana Bhakti, given in the scriptures, revealed to us by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Tridandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada, our most beloved founder acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. There is a tendency sometimes nowadays in ISKCON to minimize Prabhupada's instructions, to introduce some new concept of how we can be Krishna conscious. But such deviations from the teachings of His Divine Grace will destroy this movement if they are allowed to take root in this movement. This movement is rooted very solidly in the instructions of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. If you don't want to follow Prabhupada's instructions, then go somewhere else, basically. You know, this is a movement dedicated to following the teachings of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. If you've read his books and you understand what his teachings are and you like to follow them, you're most welcome to stay with us. But if you want to introduce some new concepts, if you want to be the spiritual master and introduce some new concepts, then go somewhere else and do that. Don't do that here. This is a place where we follow Prabhupada. Because, why? Because Srila Prabhupada is the most realized, the most powerful, the most blessed spiritual master in the history of the universe for inundating the world with love of Godhead. There is no spiritual master who has ever been as empowered as Srila Prabhupada for delivering the entire world from the cycle of birth and death. You can search far and wide, you will never see any guru who has been able to accomplish what Srila Prabhupada accomplished, of establishing the Krishna consciousness process, the Krishna consciousness movement throughout the entire world, and leaving behind a legacy in the form of his followers, the followers of his followers, his writings, so many recorded lectures, recorded letters, so many temples, so many projects, such an incredible legacy he has left behind for the re-spiritualization of the entire human society. So there's no question of introducing some new concepts into our movement. We simply have to stick to the concepts given by Srila Prabhupada. Not so. Simply have to follow very carefully, very sincerely, the teachings of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Tridandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada. This will make our lives successful. This will get us off of the quivering platform onto the steady platform. Brahma Bhuta Prasanadmana Sochati Nakangshati Samaksarveshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. By sticking to the great Mahajana, His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, Mahajano Yena Gatasta Panta, one should follow the pathway of the great Mahajans, not to be listened to some Durjanas, unqualified persons, psychologists, or whatever, to tell us what we should be doing. No. We follow not the Durjanas, but the Mahajanas. We follow the Mahajanas. That is the pathway. We are lost in the dense, deep forest of delusion. To get out of this place, we require someone who knows the pathway. If on our own we try to get out and we follow someone who doesn't know the way out, who's also trapped, we will remain entrapped in this dense, deep forest of delusion. But if we are so fortunate to have found a person in this forest, who knows the way out of it, who happens to be here for the purpose of delivering us, of rescuing us from this forest of material existence. If we're intelligent, we will follow such a person very carefully. We won't try to tell him how to instruct us. Sometimes we see that. A person will try to instruct the spiritual master. Instead of taking instructions, they want to give instructions. Everybody wants to be an authority nowadays. No one wants to follow an authority. That's our diseased condition. Vishnujan Maharaj told me that Prabhupada had said that if everybody wants to become a chief, who will become an Indian? You know, American Indian. You know, you have the chiefs in the Indian tribe, and each tribe has a chief. So everybody's going to be a chief, and who will be the Indian? So we have to actually follow the bona fide spiritual master. Not that we want to ourselves artificially take the position of being an authority. That's our disease. We're thinking, I'm an authority. Some lady wrote me. She said that, well, you really can't, you know, if you haven't achieved the goal, then you really can't say anything about it. And then she went on to say so many things about the process of self-realization. As if she admitted she hadn't achieved the goal, but yet she felt she was qualified to give so many comments about what, you know, what's wrong with our movement. How we're doing them, how we have a wrong understanding. It's completely ridiculous. She said, have you seen God? I just want to know one thing. Have you seen God? That was her challenge. Have you seen God face to face? That was the only thing she wanted to know. She wanted a challenge that, you know, she's more qualified than we are to explain the pathway of perfection. Then she wanted a challenge. Have you seen God face to face? Of course, in many ways, I'm seeing God face to face right now. And we are also seeing God face to face at every moment through the eyes of Arjuna. Parang Brahma, Parang Dhamma. You see, by hearing the Bhagavad Gita and following the Bhagavad Gita, we are seeing Krishna at every minute through the eyes of Arjuna. Yes, we are seeing God at every minute. By following that pathway of Arjuna, we are seeing Krishna at every minute. Rasoham mapsav kaunteya prabhashmi shashashuryayo pranavasaravedeshu shabdake parashangashu. O son of Kunti, I am the taste of water. I am the light of the sun and the moon. I am the syllable om in the Vedic mantras. I am the sound in ether, and I am the ability in men. So yes, actually we are seeing God at every minute. For those who do not want to follow the pathway of the Mahajans, they may challenge us in so many ways to try to negate what we are explaining, what we are teaching them. But as the Bengali proverb goes, the dogs will bark, but the caravan will pass. We are on the pathway back to home, back to Godhead. And so many people will bark. They may criticize us. All you ever do is think about Krishna. Like that's something wrong, you know. All you do is chant, think about Krishna 24 hours. Actually, we take that as a blessing. Someone says, oh, all you ever do is think about Krishna. That's actually a blessing. Thank you very much for the blessing. Yes, that is our process, to only think of Krishna. Have no other thought except for Krishna, 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 Krishna. We want nothing else. So this process of Krishna consciousness is simply wonderful. If we stay on this pathway, or if we get on this pathway, if we're not, if we find that we're off the pathway sometimes, or too much of the time. If we will simply get ourselves on this pathway and you know, place ourselves solidly on this pathway and stay on this pathway, then our perfection is guaranteed. I personally guarantee that if you will stick to this pathway with full determination, that you will achieve the supreme destination, Goloka Vrindavan, and you'll become reinstated in your eternal spiritual identity in the pastimes of Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of God. So I can ask now if there's any questions. Yes.
You said if somebody cannot follow principles, then you should go somewhere else. But then somebody can say that devotees are compassionate. They don't give a chance.
Yes, devotees are very compassionate. The point is, we don't. If you want to stay here, don't do nonsense. That's the point. Don't try to propagate some nonsense. Devotees are very compassionate, but if someone wants to do some nonsense thing here, to introduce some new teaching, they're not welcome to do that. If somebody wants to change the philosophy and bring in some new, you know, something is better than Prabhupada, and we're not interested to hear that. Prabhupada is the most realized spiritual master. There's no fault in Prabhupada's teachings. Someone wants to point out there's a fault in what Prabhupada said, and actually, you know, we have to adjust things because Prabhupada, after all, was from, you know, turn of the century, Bengal, and he saw everything through a certain cultural, historical perspective, which is not absolute, and now we have to adjust things. These sort of things people are saying sometimes in our movement. There are people who are challenging Prabhupada's absolute position, who claim to be members of our movement. So we don't want to drive them out, we want to rectify them. That's all. We want to rectify them. Our program is, as Prabhupada said, an astrologer had said that Prabhupada has built a house in which the whole world can live peacefully, and Prabhupada said, yes, that is my mission. So the fact is, we don't want to drive anyone out, but we don't want people to be introducing bogus philosophy here also. We want to train them how to understand that Prabhupada is absolutely correct. What he's saying is absolutely correct. There's no flaw in his teachings. If someone doesn't understand something that Prabhupada said, they shouldn't try to find fault with it. They should approach someone who's qualified to explain to them how it is true. If you don't understand how something is true that Prabhupada has taught, you shouldn't think it's false. That there's something wrong with Prabhupada, you should think there's something wrong with you. There's some incompleteness in your understanding. Then you should try to find a devotee who can help you to understand what is the defect in your understanding that does not allow you to understand how what Prabhupada is saying is true. That's the way to do it. Now that, well, Prabhupada, you know, that was, you know, 30 years ago, and things have changed since then. We have to move on now. No. Just as the words of Krishna are true 5,000 years after he spoke them in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Srila Prabhupada's words are equally true. Prabhupada is not giving his own words. Actually, Krishna from the heart dictated to Prabhupada what to give us in these purports. It is actually the words of Krishna. So yes, we don't want to, our program is not to drive anyone out. We want to bring everyone in to this movement. We want the whole world to join this movement. But it has to be on Prabhupada's terms, not their terms. Prabhupada has established what is the standard. It's like he said, don't make the temple into a free hotel where people just come and eat and sleep. They don't actually surrender. Someone at the actual standard of surrender to Krishna has to be maintained, even if there's even if we just have a very small number of devotees. We have to maintain the standard of what is surrender to Krishna. That's a fact. And if we do that, if we maintain the pure standard, you will see that eventually that day will come and the whole world will come. Just like in India, I think it's in Delhi, Prabhupada explains, there's one sweet shop where they're famous, only pure ghee do they use. And the sweets are more expensive. But it's the most popular sweet shop because they have the quality. So this Krishna Ganya's movement, there's so many spirit, you know, so-called spiritual movements out there nowadays. A dime a dozen. And it's so easy to join them and get initiated because they don't demand the austerity that Prabhupada demands of us. You see? And they say, why don't I just go somewhere else? I can do that. There's that hugging guru. You know, I just go hug mom, hug the guru and become enlightened by hugging some guru, the hugging guru. She just goes to the hotel and thousands of people line up to get their hug and they get enlightened. They're getting their hug from the guru. If spiritual enlightenment was that cheap, you know, you just got to get a hug. You see? We could make the whole world Krishna conscious very quickly and just give everyone a hug. But it's not that cheap thing. Just by giving a big, you know, big warm hug, you can get enlightened. You have to purify the consciousness of the dirt accumulated for millions of lifetimes. And that requires austerity. Requires giving up illicit sex, giving up intoxication, giving up meat eating, giving up gambling. It requires rising early in the morning, attending Mangalarti on a steady basis. Sadhana bhakti. These anarthas are accumulating for millions of lifetimes. To get free of them requires a very dedicated practice. So we welcome everyone to come and join in this dedicated practice. But if they want to come and turn this into a free hotel, forget it. Questions more? Yes. Probably have to help me on this one. Then I'm back, you know.
She read in Prabhupada's book that women are not as intelligent as men. How does he mean that?
Oh, okay. Actually, Prabhupada explains that a woman who surrenders to Krishna is the most intelligent person. This description of women being less intelligent does not apply to devotee women. Actually, as Prabhupada points out in one of his lectures. In the material world, in many ways we can see women are less intelligent than men because they become so much exploited by, they allow themselves to be exploited by men. In the material world, the men are very much in a rascal, cheating mood, and the women being less intelligent allow themselves to be cheated by men. The man will come and he will have sex, make the woman pregnant, and he goes away. You see, the woman allows herself to be victimized by such unscrupulous men. That is less intelligent. But a Krishna conscious woman, Prabhupada explains, is the most intelligent person. So, that's our understanding. That applies not to devotee women, but to the general female population in the world society. They are women allow themselves to be exploited by men. That is less intelligent. A woman should not allow herself to be exploited by an unscrupulous man. But being less intelligent, they do that. They're carried away by unscrupulous men again and again. And they go, they either have to, you know, they get pregnant, they have to raise the child, taking help from the government with no husband to protect, or they go and get an abortion and they get the karma of murdering their own child. It's a very less intelligent position that women in general have in the society. But a woman who comes to Krishna consciousness, she's most intelligent. It's not that it's not that she's limited in any way. A Krishna conscious woman can become the most intelligent. It's up to her. How much do you want to become fully intelligent? Surrender to Krishna, and you will develop full intelligence. One woman, she said, Prabhupada, is it true that women are less intelligent? Prabhupada said, only if you think you're a woman. Because, you see, we're not men or women. If someone's thinking, I'm a woman and I want to establish that women are not less intelligent. Well, guess what? You just established that you're less intelligent because you're thinking, I am a woman and I want to establish that women are not less intelligent. I'm a woman. You have to know that women are not less. It's less intelligent. If you realize I'm a spirit soul, I'm part and parcel of Krishna, and there is no limit to your intelligence. There's no limit to your intelligence if you realize I'm the eternal servant of Krishna. Doesn't matter what kind of body you may have. You become the most intelligent person when you surrender to Krishna. Yes.
The gopis also have apparently a female form, but they are not considered to be women in this context because they are
Who?
So intelligent. The gopis, like
yes. Actually, it's interesting to note. Sometimes people say, well, you know, the Hare Krishnas, they're a bunch of male chauvinists. But how could that be? Because every morning in the Tulsi prayers, all these men pray that they can become women in their next life. Every day we say, we're praying to become dasis. All the men, every day in Tulsi prayers, you study the translation. All these staunch men, brahmacharis, sannyasis, they're praying, oh please, I want to be a woman in my next life. Make me a gopi in Vrindavan. So you can't say that we're male chauvinists. We're all praying to become women. Because actually the female associates of Allura, they are the most exalted of all of Krishna's devotees, the gopis. So, of course, in the spiritual world, there are devotees with male forms and devotees with female forms. But ultimately, the spirit soul, in the spiritual sense, they are called, all the devotees are called Prakriti, or female, and Krishna is called Purusha. Even in India, if you go, we were on our way to Vrindavan, we stopped at one gas station, and I was looking for where I could pass urine. And it was in Hindi. You know, I was looking for men and women, or maybe, you know, a lot of airports they'll have somebody with pants and somebody with a dress, so you know, but it was all in Hindi. I said, which side should I go in? Trying to figure it out. But then I studied a little Sanskrit, and I saw, Purusha and Prakriti. Oh, yes. Then I knew which side I was supposed to go on. So in Hindi, men, you know, male is Purusha and Prakriti is female. And that's actually the original Sanskrit understanding. The energetic is Purusha is male principle, and the Prakriti or the energy is the female principle. So we are all the Prakriti of Krishna, therefore we are all ultimately females. We're all female. That's our position. We're all females. We're all females here. We have one male only, and that is Krishna, Nrisimha Bhagavan. He is the male, and the rest of us are female. And his highest spiritual understanding. Questions, Mara? Question, Eddie? See, you're shaking your head back there. No question? Have you understood what I've said? The translation is going smoothly back there. You're able to keep up with me?
Almost.
Almost. I should slow down a little bit then. Question?
Yeah, one more question. It's a little bit personal. We know that we should avoid too much sense gratification, right? Because the soul becomes quivering if you have too much sense gratification.
But, yes, yes.
Yeah, but especially in the temples, we have so much very nice mahaprasadam, specially made tasty, you know. How can we, avoid this too much attraction for tasty food?
Yeah, you have to make more devotees so that there'll be less maha to go around for every individual. Yeah, if you have too few devotees, then it's a problem. You have to make more devotees.
So much sugar inside. And
all yeah. Now, the fact, if you take too much mahaprasadam, you'll become lusty. And you'll fall down. So you have to, the tongue has to be, you have to take, you know, regulated. Prabhupada said it's sweet every now and then. Not that you're taking sweets constantly. And every time you open your mouth, another sweet goes in. No. You have to regulate your senses. Sweet sometimes, but a basic diet, you stick to, you know, dal, rice, chapati, sabji. A basic healthy diet, and a little sweets now and then is all right. But not that you live on sweets. That will cause fall down eventually. You keep indulging your tongue like that. Outside of the health consideration, just on the taste consideration, you'll fall down eventually. That will be your downfall. Your tongue will destroy your bhakti. So be careful. Vacha vegam, manasat krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udaropasta vegam. If there's too much mahaprasadam, then box it up and take it out and distribute it. You know, make some friends in town. You know, whenever you go to town, take some prasadam to them. We do that in Austin. There's one man who runs a shoe store, and he's a very nice Indian man. So we always we do our weekly shopping. The grocery store is next door to his shoe store, so we always bring him nice prasadam every week. Some nice maha sweets, and then he becomes very happy, and he gives nice donations to help our society. Because we always bring in those maha sweets. So just find some nice people you can deliver sweets to. That way you will be happy by preaching. Preaching is more enlivening than eating sweets. Preaching is the ultimate sweet. If you're too much lusty after sweets, then distribute them to others and watch them enjoying the sweets. And you'll become satisfied by seeing them enjoying the sweets. You can also take every now and then too. But don't subsist on sweets. Questions, Mara? So, today we've exhausted our time here. So we thank you all very much. Rantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.